Welcome to the Scuffed Podcast. I'm Adam Bells in Minneapolis. With me is Greg Velasquez in Des Moines. We talk about U.S. men's soccer. Quick programming note, the Bells family is on vacation, so Greg and I recorded a light version of the podcast, a quick conversation about the end of CONCACAF's stay in Russia, and a few other odds and ends. We expect to be back in full force next week, and a week after that, we'll drop our much-anticipated U20 player pool episode, so look for that. Meanwhile, here's Greg and I. CONCACAF's time at the 2018 World Cup has come to an end. I gotta say, for me, this Mexico exit brings some measure of closure. Everyone in our region is back to a clean slate. We're watching other teams from other parts of the world compete for the championship now, but we're just a little bit further removed from the feast of disaster we've been served as USMNT fans. I know you got a little different perspective, Greg. How you doing?
I'm doing okay, pal. So it's always, I feel like Mexico's gone out and disappointing fashion for the last half dozen World Cups, but the bright side of that consistency is you learn to measure hopes to begin with.
I know you're good at that. You're a pro at measured hope. Yeah, same old story for Mexico, right? Exciting moments. They never got played off the pitch except by Sweden, weirdly, and they're out. In the round of 16.
Yeah, they're out. They're out against arguably the best team in the world. Certainly, I feel like Brazil is in that position now after several of the other contenders crashed out in more spectacular fashion. So, yeah, that's a very standard World Cup for Mexico. Their most exciting moment, obviously, the win over Germany has absolutely had a lot of its sort of luster removed. Given Germany's horrific showing overall, and then the fact that Mexico failed to go on to win the group, failed to give themselves the best case to get into the quarters, and then bowed out in, what would you say? Their loss to Brazil wasn't anything. They didn't play like an incredible game and just kind of got unlucky. Like, they never really looked like they were going to win that game.
Yeah, I mean, I thought they looked really good in the first half. They had some half chances that, you know, half chances are oftentimes what you get in this tournament. And some people convert them and some people don't. And I don't know. I thought Lozano bashed one off a defender from kind of an acute angle where he could have perhaps played Herrera at the penalty marker. And Herrera had a chance to hit one first time that Vela played across the box. I'm talking about in like the first 20 minutes.
Yep, the first half of the first half, they looked good. So I would say they didn't even create their half chances didn't even materialize into half chances. I feel like they were always still one pass away. And I think that was the most frustrating thing for me. And aside from Vela and Ochoa's performances, the most consistent thing for me was Mexico's, I don't know if I want to say like panic in the attacking third in the last 25 yards, but poor decision making. Even against Germany, like the one break that they pulled off, they did very well, but so many of the other breaks they wasted. And then in this game against Brazil, Mexico's too good to sort of settle for those shots through four defenders. And what I mean by that is, like, if you're a worse team, you have to take the first open shot you get, because the longer you're sort of trying to break down the defense, the more likely you are to lose the ball. I think Mexico's better than that. I think Mexico is good enough to make sort of the extra pass. And they just never did in this tournament. They just continued to, first chance they got, hit it. And the one you're talking about where Vela plays that amazing ball across the top of the 18 to Herrera with time, since he didn't take it first time, four Brazilians converged on him, which means there should be a slip pass somewhere. And he never looked like he was looking for it.
Yeah.
He just controlled it and then smashed it into the sea of bodies that got between him and the goal.
Yeah, it looked very unthreatening by the time he was able to wind up and hit it with his left foot. It was blocked basically right off of his foot. Yeah,
that's what I felt was the most sort of the most missed chances were those, like making the extra pass, and I thought that was in every single game. And the other thing I'll say is I thought they were too stubborn. Like, they didn't recognize that their two best attackers throughout the tournament were Vela and Lozano within like counterattacks or within possessions. So you'd have guys who could dish the ball to a Vela in space, but instead they would keep it and try to do something on their own. And that was frustrating, watching, to be like, Vela has been unplayable. Give him the ball in this situation.
Yeah. Vela was a clear star of the tournament for Mexico, in my view. I didn't even think Lozano was really that dangerous, even though he scored the big goal against Germany.
No, I totally agree with you on that. Vela was way better, way more effective, looked much more comfortable regardless of the opposition. Like, in every game, he was one of the best players on the field, regardless of uniform.
Yeah. He really was having his way with that Danny Alves. Wagner. Yeah, that Danny Alves stand-in. You're right, though. Brazil is probably the favorite now. I mean, it'll be whoever emerges out of this side of the group. This side of the bracket. Brazil, France, Belgium, or Uruguay. You got to think is the favorite to win it all. And Brazil or France is going to be that team, most likely, you'd think.
Yeah, that's what it's shaping up as.
What did you think of Andres Guardado? He's got a lot of cred with Mexico fans, I think, because of the way he broke out in 2010, right?
Right.
As a young player. How would you measure his tournament? He seems like he was on the pitch for every meaningful moment.
So I thought he was adequate, and it's sort of one of those things where somebody other than, I mean, Vela and Ochoa, I think, were those players. But Mexico needed one or two, maybe even three other guys to have sort of the tournament of their life, or certainly the game of their life against Brazil. And he didn't. I mean, he was okay, but almost everyone on Mexico was okay. You know what I mean? There weren't any horrific mistakes in the first 75, 85 minutes. So it's hard to say they lost because this guy did this. They just needed a couple guys to be even better than that. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah. The word that comes to mind for me with Guardado is invisible, which is probably a little harsh, but he just, you know, sort of like Ali Bedoya for the U.S. national team, you know? Like,
right.
Just not really doing anything proactive, to use the word of the week. He's not a protagonist, or he hasn't been in this tournament.
No, I agree with that. Now, in the Brazil game, it's sort of like that's not unexpected, because you're playing the best team in the world. You're not going to get guys who are just clearly going to dominate midfield against Brazil. Brazil's subs are better than Mexico's starters. Mm-hmm. With the exception, I think, of Vela. So, you know, it's sort of forgivable to be in. It's not like a terrible thing that Guardado couldn't control the game against Brazil. It just sort of speaks to somebody needed to if they were going to get a result.
Right. And nobody did, as you've pointed out. And then the sort of decisive moment of the game came from Neymar Jr., a player I can't stand right now. I'm so tired of his antics. But you got to hand it to him. That goal was a clever little back heel at the top of the box to Willian. And then what really impresses me is the way Neymar just sprints to the back post as Willian takes his guy down to the end line. Really, really smart stuff.
Very smart, very clinical. Willian and Neymar, I think, were the two best players in the game, which pains me because Vela was so good, but I think Vela suffered from not having enough around him. But yes, Neymar is hard to cheer for. It seems like, to get into a little bit of a Brazil tangent, I feel like his fate at this World Cup will end up being similar to 2014, where people just want to hurt him at this point. So I don't see how he's going to get through the next few knockout games where teams get a little cagey. He should be fine against Belgium because that could be a very wide open game. But in this, I feel like if Brazil are in the semifinal against either Uruguay or France, like I think Neymar could be in for a rough 90 minutes.
Yeah. And, you know, he kind of deserves it.
He invites it, doesn't he?
Yeah. But, man, he's a player, no doubt about it. And then they got the insurance goal, also sort of created by Neymar. Was that in stoppage time or 88th minute?
It was like 88th, 89th. And it was a horrendous, not a horrendous giveaway, but sort of a pointless giveaway. And then just a weird, like, everyone in Mexico seemed frustrated about the giveaway. Like, the guy who gives it away is fussy that somebody hadn't broken into an area that he expected him to break into. Other players around the ball were fussy that it was turned over. It seemed like a very like childish. There were two or three like little mini tantrums that were thrown on the turnover, but none of them were interested in actually going back to defend. As Brazil essentially just walks it into the net, yeah. Despite Ochoa's best efforts.
You know who else was fussy? Juan Carlos.
Osorio.
Oh, brother. He forgot to do his breathing exercises after that one. He was pissed.
He knew he didn't have anything to like live for after that. That was the end of their tournament run.
Yep, that was it. So, yeah, I mean, big picture, CONCACAF, we're all done. You got any sort of wrap-up thoughts? Because I think we'll probably talk about the World Cup in our next couple episodes, but we won't be doing any more extended sessions, I don't think.
Sure. No, just, you know, CONCACAF are out and people point to what a bad performance it was, and I don't think they're necessarily wrong. Yeah. Not a great showing. But again, the margins are super narrow for getting out of your group versus not, where the other team's results – the games you're not even playing in will play a super important part in whether you go through or not. You know, so the U.S. as an example, in 2002, their historic run, they backed into the round of 16 the same way Mexico did in this World Cup.
Yep.
So it's just one of those things. And again, to say that this shows CONCACAF is really weak, I think is a bit sample sizey and cherry picky. No one, I don't think, in 2014 was arguing that it displayed how strong CONCACAF was to put 3 out of 4 teams in the knockout rounds in the same year that Spain, Portugal, Italy, and England all crashed out of the group stage. So, no, it's just sort of the natural way of tournament soccer.
Just the gods of variance exercising right. Their whims to some
yeah,
extent.
And that's,
yeah, it was a poor performance, though, by the region, no doubt about it. I mean,
right. But so how about this then? Did any of those teams lose any games that they were expected to win? You know, I mean, no one disgraced themselves because, you know, Panama was it was a huge upset for Panama to even be in the tournament. Costa Rica drew a really tough group in their Costa Rica. And then Mexico did about what was expected of them in a not the order that it was expected, but they got through.
I think expectations rose for Mexico after they beat Germany, and the loss to Sweden was considered, a game they probably should have won, I guess, until it was over. And then we realized that it wasn't a game they should have won. and now Sweden is through to the quarterfinals. So,
yeah.
What do you
think? With a shout at, not – drawing England or Colombia in the quarterfinals isn't the worst draw for any team. In the same way that whoever's playing against Sweden in the quarterfinal is going to be happy with that.
Right. Right. Colombia, England later this afternoon. That'll be later this afternoon, depending on when you're listening to this. We're recording on Tuesday. And that'll be a fun game to watch, I hope.
Yes.
So you got Brazil to win it all? I mean, I'm not going to hold you to the prediction, but you're just like, that's what it feels like right now.
That's the chalk, right? I think they were the favorites, but in most betting markets at the beginning of the tournament, the fact that they're still alive at this point with so many of their major competitors out means you're not going to get a lot of great odds betting on Brazil to win it all.
Yeah. How about that Belgium-Japan game? That second half, that's the best 45 minutes of soccer we've seen this tournament.
That was incredible. And the best part of that last Belgium goal is like the number of coaches who now have youth coaches who now have an amazing visual to show all of their players for
a counterattack.
Yeah, for a counterattack movement without the ball. I mean, Lukaku is deservedly getting so much love for what he did, despite not really touching the ball.
Yeah, I mean, well, let's describe it real quick. It was basically like an S-curve run, right? He drags his, as De Bruyne drives down the middle, Lukaku runs diagonally to, in front of De Bruyne to his left.
Yeah, it runs across De Bruyne's face, which is what we work so hard on getting our kids to do.
And then
open space for the wing.
Right, and then De Bruyne slips it out. Who got the assist on that shot? Was that Hazard?
Yes. I'll actually have to double check, but
whoever it was gets the ball on the wing and then just drives it across the middle. Lukaku leaves it.
Yeah, and Lukaku before, I mean, in this, as the ball goes wide then in the space Lukaku opened up, Lukaku then curves his run back towards the ball again to drag the next recovering defender with him, leaving the far post wide open.
Yeah, what beautiful stuff. I can see Josh Sargent doing it right now. And then Chad Lee has a relatively easy tap-in at the back post, courtesy Lukaku. Beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a fantastic capper for a day of soccer.
I'm with some friends who live in Japan right now, and they wanted to watch the game late last night, having not looked at the score. So I knew the score, and I was just watching with them, and we were about halfway through the first half, and I said, hey, you know, it was like 11:15 at night, and we all have like little kids who get up at ungodly hours in the morning. So I was like, hey guys, I don't want to tell you what's going to happen, but we should probably skip to the second half because you're going to want to see that. And they agreed to it. And there was a lot of screaming at midnight last night in this big house. So that was fun.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what we're here for though. And there have been, this World Cup has spoiled us with so many of those games. That's probably the new pinnacle, but I feel like we've reached a new pinnacle every other day. So, holding my breath for what England-Colombia will give us.
A 5-0 Colombia win is what I'm hoping for.
I don't even care, and that's the beauty of it. I didn't care what happened in the Belgian-Japan game. I was just here for the. I'm here for the drama now.
For me, at least, the Mexico exit, like I said right off the top, it seems like we're one step further removed from the time of sadness in the U.S. with all of the CONCACAF teams out. It's like we're all on the same level now. We're all out of the World Cup.
Yeah, we're all here to qualify for 2022.
Tough weekend for the U.S. 19-year-old center backs Austin Trusty and Mark McKenzie for the Philadelphia Union. They gave up 4 goals in a loss, and one each was a poor giveaway. A loss to LAFC, pretty good team, but 2 of the goals, one each for Trusty and McKenzie, was the result of a very bad giveaway, just a heavy touch in their own half, and that's not great. So just, we're keeping track of these guys, young Americans getting playing time in MLS. We'll see if that lasts after Saturday's performance.
I don't think those kids are going anywhere. Again, I honestly don't think that the teams are playing them in sort of a speculative way. I think they're playing them because they believe they're the best center backs on the roster.
Yeah, you're probably right. We gotta highlight the bad and the good. Gotta be
right. Oh yeah,
it's a no spin zone here. The LA highlighting the good, the LA Galaxy 2, which includes Alex Mendez, Yuli Yanez, and Efra Alvarez. They beat the Seattle Sounders to 5-3 on Sunday, on a brace from Alvarez and a free kick from a really nice free kick goal from Mendez. As I've said a few times, I'm going to just keep teasing it. At USA Prospects, a guy named Joey Anthone and I are going to do a big, long episode in mid-July on the U-20s and the U-20 pool ahead of World Cup qualifying in November. We'll be discussing Mendez and Yanez in detail, I think. But those kids are really good. They just walked their way through the DA playoffs to get to the semifinals, which are this weekend, I believe. Just destroyed their opposition, including the Philadelphia Union U-19s. So good on them. Alvarez still committed to Mexico. No news there, but as far as we know, the last we knew, the door was open.
Thanks to Mexico not beating Brazil, that could have closed doors going north and open doors going south.
Yeah, we failed to mention that. Yep, that's probably good for U.S. recruiting interests of dual nationals. Finally, for me, preseason training camp is gearing up in Europe already. Two little nuggets going out on the wires today. Jonathan Amon, who hasn't featured yet for FC Nordsjælland in their preseason games. The Danish league starts even earlier than everybody else. He just signed a contract through 2022 with Nordsjælland. So that's a big vote of confidence for the 19-year-old. And it signals to me that Nordsjælland wants to make sure they get a big transfer fee for him. And finally, Josh Sargent. The Bundesliga PR team put out one of their typically kind of silly articles, but there's always something to glean from them. Sargent was the first Werder Bremen player to show up at training camp.
He's punctual,
yeah. He's the first kid. He's the first player there. Showed up in his gray hoodie and questionable facial hair and with a big smile on his face. So
excellent. So I've got some Josh Sargent or a Josh Sargent question for you.
Shoot.
Bremen had obviously said that they felt like content with their forwards, but then I'm sure you've heard that they've just yesterday, I think, signed Japanese forward Yuya Osako from Cologne.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. He's 27. I don't think he's not like there's not a ton of buzz around him, I don't think. But it's just they're adding some pieces. And I don't know, again, who knows if it's for depth or if it's somebody they think has the potential to be their number one striker.
Yeah, let me double check my facts here. But I think didn't they just lose Thomas Delaney to Dortmund? Yeah, he just got signed a couple weeks ago. Not exactly a striker, but kind of a false nine sort of deal.
Okay, well, there you go. One in, one out.
Yeah, but I mean, I think you were skeptical of Florian Kohfeldt's statements back in the spring when he said we're not gonna get any more strikers. I'm with you. I'm with you if you put a gun to my head. I would admit that probably doesn't mean that much, but all are, any doubts about Sargent getting playing time are gone now that he was the first kid to show up at training camp.
That locks him into a starting spot. They love grit.
Hardworking Midwesterner is what he is. Anything else?
No, man. I'm gonna buckle down and watch this England Colombia game. Majority of the other coaches around here, as you'd expect, have ties to England. So I'll have to deal with a lot of the banter.
It's a poison. It's a poison in American soccer, the English influence. Well, let me ask you this. When people talked about wanting Juan Carlos Osorio. Colombia made me think of this because he's a Colombian. Juan Carlos Osorio as the next U.S. coach. What are your feelings on that?
Oh man, I don't really see it happening.
Yeah.
I don't know if it would necessarily be a good thing or a bad thing. I really don't have too much of an opinion on Osorio taking over for the U.S.
That's fair.
I don't know. There's really nothing he's done that I think is like completely inexplicable. I don't care that he started Rafa Marquez. I kind of care that he started Rafa Marquez, but I just don't think Marquez should have been playing at all in this World Cup. But no, there's nothing where I'm like, there's nothing that signals that he would be unable to do the job.
Yeah. Okay.
I'd be very interested in what his sort of plan would be for the U.S. national team.
Okay. Yeah. We don't need to have a hot take on it. Any thoughts on the Drake Pusha T beef? No, I'm just kidding. All right. I gotta get out of here. Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you.